Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. And welcome to Kelly Wells Fights with Technology. Not always my thing, so I'm gonna do the one thing I forgot to do to start the show beforehand. Nate is our IT guy. That's what he's for. I'm gonna be honest. Nate's never watched a wrestling show. He's on for IT, and we ask him stuff, and he gets enough context to say, "Oh yeah, Carmelo, hey, he doesn't know who that is."
Tommaso Ciampa, my guy.
Yes. I kid the Nate, mostly because he's not here and can't defend himself. He did us a real solid, putting off his night of heavy gambling to call us into the show, and here we are taking swipes at him like he's never going to hear this. And maybe he won't. That's true. Like, he's gonna turn this on in a few hours and go, "Well, I've had enough," and we will never hear from him again. Let's talk NXT from April the 9th, 2024. Guys, I'm all pro wrestlinged out from the weekend. Now, I always watch a lot of pro wrestling because I'm a New Japan completist, but, man, there was a lot to cover. On Sunday, I ended up watching both WrestleMania days back-to-back because I couldn't watch Stand and Deliver until late on Saturday when night one was taking place. The only thing I accidentally spoiled for myself was the main event of night one, which, foregone conclusion, but still, I ruined it for myself. Had a great time, had my most longtime best friend over. We watched that, had a lot of laughs, and really dug the show. And then I covered the second night with Wade and Nick Barbati in a real fun post-show experience. But I've seen a lot of wrestling, and I wasn't in the mood to do it today. So what did they give me? 30 minutes commercial free. I just wanted – my fingers wanted a break. But what do you know? It was a good show. I always get the most excited for the weekly show when it's the first show out of something major because you genuinely don't know which direction it's going to go. And we're going to see – more of the same. We saw more of the same in this show, and we'll see more of the same next week. But I believe it is justified. Maybe not the one this week. Like, why did that just not happen? We'll get there. But the one that's coming next week. There you go. I mean, maybe they just needed a main event. Maybe it's not like they're surprising themselves saying that Bron Breakker is going to be called up. Like, he's already half called up.
And why not? Never mind. We'll get there.
Yes, indeed. I don't want people to say who is that guy in the background, so I'd probably better introduce you. I suppose I could introduce myself. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games, Bruce.
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee253. And if you haven't watched Stand and Deliver yet, don't have the time, you can find my report up at the Torch because I had to wake up at 5:30 to prepare myself and do the report from here in nice, lovely, sunny Honolulu, Hawaii. I guess there's that.
I am going to tell people if they can't find the time to watch Stand and Deliver, go ahead and just find the time to watch Stand and Deliver. It's pretty good. and yeah, it's up there with a lot of the black and gold stuff, I think. Really was a pretty good show. And what an atmosphere. Oh, my. So let's talk main event. Now, normally when there's a main event segment, it means the main event wasn't very noteworthy. This time there was a main event segment and the main event was noteworthy. But let's talk first Trick Ilya Carmelo. So Trick Williams comes out to celebrate his win. I guess this is a thing we're doing. If you go out there and you won a match, even though if it wasn't for a championship, you just – what's the selling point to somebody who doesn't know wrestling as a work? Like, this guy's going to talk about how he was good in a match and he won. Very strange. but we accept it all the same. And Trick does stuff on the mic, basic stuff on the mic, but he's Trick, so it's good. He calls out Ilya Dragunov, who at first denies him a rematch because he said it's time to get new blood, but he didn't need a lot of convincing and did say, okay, I'll give you one in 2 weeks at Spring Breakin', which to me was very interesting because that's the first of the 2 weeks of Spring Breakin', and you would think they would end it with that. But that week of Spring Breakin' is also before the draft. So Ilya can drop that match and then go up and be drafted a handful of nights later on Raw or SmackDown. So I was going to say very curious, but I guess what I mean is not curious at all. It seems like we know what's going to be happening here. But at any rate, it will produce good TV. And the draft is always a fun time, if overindulgent, but a fun time. Our Carmelo Hayes, he's still out there. I didn't know this worked for me because I didn't know whether he was going to show up or not. Because you could just keep Carmelo off TV until he's drafted in a couple of weeks also. But they didn't do that. They had him attack Trick in a way that ran him into Ilya. They had to oversell because in these segments you have to. And Trick got the better of him. And they had Trick get in Carmelo get the better of him. And Carmelo gets in Trick's face and says, you're not going to make it to Spring Breakin' because I'm going to take you out in a steel cage next week. And I thought that the beauty of this scene was the audience couldn't hear it because he wasn't mic'd up. So they didn't cheer him. They just booed what he did, even though they would have cheered if they would have heard the part about the steel cage. So, but we, the viewers at home, got to hear that. So apparently we're going to get a cage match. We already have four matches for next week. That's not very common, but we do have that already. And there you go, Trick, Ilya, Carmelo, all three guys still right there in the main event picture, but it seems like we know where it's headed for the first time in a while, Bruce.
Yeah, this was an interesting segment to me, and not in the most positive ways, mostly coming from Ilya Dragunov. So he comes in, and he says, my answer is no. I'm going, oh, you're sorry, you got a heel turn from Ilya Dragunov. And then all of a sudden, it, like you said, not much convincing. It's, okay, 2 weeks. And so I'm thinking, oh, all right, are you going to tell me that for that to happen, he's going to have to beat somebody next week that you handpick, a kind of a pick-your-poison match thing, and then he'll get the match at Spring Breakin'. Nope, it's just, if you beat me, leave NXT. Okay, cool. I think Dragunov was a bit of a miss here. Again, I haven't been the biggest fan of his reign. I know people are really high on him and what he does in the ring. I like, you know, his matches are a bit one-note to me, but I do like what he does in the ring. So I felt a bit conflicted, I guess, with this segment. I thought Trick was fine. I mean, the crowd was eating everything that he was putting out there. And then the interference from Carmelo Hayes, like you said, it worked because I wasn't expecting that. But once I started hearing the crowd making the noise, you knew then it was Carmelo coming out. And I think the crowd was as surprised as we were because they probably thought he was done too. So that was nice. He took it to both men, mostly to Trick, but I think he also got a hit or two in on Ilya. And then yeah, made the steel cage match announcement, and this will probably function as Carmelo's send-off in NXT, and because I don't want to see a triple threat match happen if he wins and gets added, but I assume this will be a send-off, and he'll get drafted to SmackDown come April 20, whatever it is on that Friday. Yeah, I think overall, Trick and Carmelo Hayes are still the people that are going to be most remembered for this time, whereas Ilya Dragunov's reign will be kind of a side note or a second act that people think about during this time, which isn't necessarily his fault to a certain extent. He just happened to become the champion when they had the hottest story since Gargano Ciampa. And if it's Tommaso Ciampa's saying, it's the biggest match to, you know, in NXT history. So unfortunate for him, but I think that after next week and then in 2 weeks at Spring Breakin', we're going to see Trick at his coronation, not to channel Alexis King there, who was conspicuously absent tonight, but he's going to get his coronation, and then Ilya will be drafted. I'm assuming he got it. He got a little sneak peek on Raw last night, but I'm assuming he fits better on a show like SmackDown. So But we'll see. And yeah, I'm just really excited to see where Trick goes from here. I mean, excited to see how Trick goes from here in terms of becoming champion and how his reign ensues.
You know, it's funny you say Lexus King conspicuous by his absence, but he was absent and I didn't notice.
Well, I was wondering when I said his name, to be honest, so.
Yeah, I actually have liked Ilya's reign fairly well. They have told the same story with him in the ring a lot, which is he's kind of injured, but he's going through with the match anyway, and he has to fight from underneath. I get it. They're doing much the same thing that they kind of do with Sami Zayn at times. Certainly what they did with Sami Zayn in NXT. And it's funny, the missteps for me when he has a night like he did tonight, I say the same thing that I said with Sammy, and I'm saying a lot on 8 years back, which is everything he said well, but some of it he shouldn't have said. Like, he was produced to say things he shouldn't have had to say, but he tried to make it work in the best way possible. And I think the world of both these guys, Ilya and Sammy on the mic, but it seems like sometimes they're put in a position where they have to say things that don't keep them in the most obvious of babyface contexts. With Sammy, it was having him be whiny too often. And with Ilya, it's more a straight up, no, you're not good. Like it's a, I don't know if it's an arrogance.
Well, remember when they used to try to get the star nickname over for him?
Yeah.
I think this kind of falls in line with that. I mean, while we're on the comparison between the two, for me, the difference is that Sami Zayn, even though he's bigger than Ilya Dragunov in terms of height and, I guess, body size, Ilya has more muscle. There's just something about Sami's style and his charisma that makes me think of him more as an underdog babyface than how they've been booking Ilya Dragunov, even though he's supposed to be the underdog babyface champion to a certain extent because of how he does his matches. But I just felt like there was more of a babyface connection for me to Sami Zayn than there is Ilya Dragunov. And I think that could be one of the issues for me in terms of how I'm taking his reign. And maybe it is because the matches are very, very similar. All the big matches are very, very similar. I mean, he is learning under Shawn Michaels' tree. There were certain ebbs and flows you knew that were going to happen in his matches. So I'm not surprised by that, I guess, if I think about it. But I still say it's not as... I mean, him and Lyra Valkyrie, I felt like, had two tepid reigns right next to each other. And so, excited for Roxanne Perez and excited for Trick Williams when he does get the belt, because I feel like they both are and will bring something. Maybe it's charisma. I just feel like there's more charisma with these two compared to Dragunov and Valkyrie. Maybe that's why I feel like I just haven't connected as much.
And I think they've got just as much, but it's a different quality of charisma.
Yeah.
There's a lot coming off of both of them. Lyra's babyface stuff is more straightforward babyface, whereas Roxy ignores what so many current heels want to do. Thank you, NWO, is be the coolest person on the show. And that doesn't do your show a lot of favors in the end. And she wants to keep it in a heel context. Let's talk about her because we're there. What do you say? Like this doesn't seem like it was going to be something she could do. She came in as a baby face, a white meat baby face, and she's great in the ring. And then they had her do the thing where she was trying to overcome some mental issues. And it was shot really weirdly with a lot of really weird close-ups. And I was like, why does this scene exist? Like, as weird as the scene was already, the way it was shot was very bizarre. And that just, as a film guy, that just drives me crazy. I've worked with guys who were that bad at directing. So I'm qualified to say it was no good. I just cannot believe that all this time I said, well, you can't turn her heel because she's not a heel. So you got to try to make it work as a babyface. They turn her heel, and early on, it starts to work. And there are some people out there still pushing back against this, like it's not working. And maybe it's just because she doesn't look like one. And she doesn't. They're doing what they can with her look, but she is a small, cute girl. There's no way around that. So she doesn't look like she's going to be a heel, but I would hope the pushback that she gave the fans on trying to say you deserve it, she immediately tore into them. She did not soak up that moment. She said, no, I am a heel. I'm doing this. To hell with you all. Where were you a year ago? And she shut them up. That is not easy to do with a wrestling company. And then I'll throw to you and also ask you to remind me what the second reaction she did that was so
great.
Shut
the hell up. And she said, no, I will not shut the hell up. I'm the champion. This is my ring. This is my time. Something like that.
Yeah, go ahead. Take it away, Roxanne Perez.
Yeah, no. Roxanne Perez as a heel. I know there are some...
And her match, for that matter. Go into the Natty thing, all of it.
Look, all I say about the match is this. If you expected Natalya and Roxanne Perez to have anything less than a decent match or a good match, then I don't know what to tell you. It was, as you would expect, a really good match, told a good story. I could have gone without the interference, but the interference did serve to keep Natalya on NXT as your only report with a feud with Ola Vice. And I also really appreciated the fact that Roxanne Perez in this match didn't have to resort to using her crossface to win the match. She just used Pop Rocks, her old finisher. Because to me, I like when there is a variety of finishers or that you don't have to always use your main one to necessarily defeat your opponent each time. Right. So I like seeing that variation here because she has been using that Pop Rocks into the crossface lately as her finisher, and she just decided to go with that, which I liked. And again, the match was fine. Going back to your point about people not taking her as a heel or still questioning it. You know, I've been praising her heel work almost from the beginning, just loving this turn, especially that point where Lash Legend got the surprise open challenge when Shotzi hurt her knee because Roxanne Perez was kayfabe in the shower after her match earlier in the night, and then she just threw the TV to the ground. I really liked that, and from there, it's just been great. Her reactions to the crowd tonight, as you said, were just tremendous, and that, you know, she's not trying to be the cool heel. She's trying to be a heel because that's what her role is, right? She's trying to get people to boo her. She's trying to get the reactions against her. She's trying to do things that make people not like her because that's the role she's in. And this goes to the fact that what we've talked about before, she's changed her in-ring style to fit being a heel. And I brought up the comparison where Seth Rollins, no matter what role he's in, his in-ring style stays the same. He does the same stuff. And it's quite maddening because he's talented and smart enough to know that he can do other things. And it would save him on the bump card, too, to do a lot of these, you know, the limb targeting, the slow work, a lot of those things, not having to do topes and flips and dives and all that. That could save him a bit and also help if he is more of a heel. Now he's a babyface, I get that. But when he was a heel, there's still no discernible difference between his in-ring style to me. And you have Roxanne Perez here who almost immediately made that switch in the ring and call it a prodigy for a reason, right? And the part about maybe not necessarily accepting her as a heel, it's not to me just that she's young. I think the next step, honestly, is changing her in-ring or her entrance music. I think once that music changes to something that's a little more fitting of what the character is now, unless the long-term plan isn't for her to be a heel for a long, you know, but if they're going to keep her as a heel, I mean, honestly, while I liked her as a face and I thought her face run was okay and good, her heel run has been much better. And I'm really looking forward to what this heel championship run is going to be. They might want to think about changing that entrance music like they did for Tony D'Angelo to make it feel like a more main event level star heading into Stand and Deliver. But yeah, to me, Roxanne Perez just really doing great. I guess we could talk about Lyra Valkyrie and Tatum Paxley a little bit since they were also involved in this segment, weren't they?
Let's do it.
Tatum Paxley turned on Lyra Valkyrie and threw her into the steps by her injured shoulder, setting up a feud, which we saw coming after Saturday. Cool. That's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, that's about it. And did I forget to write it? No, I just wrote it way at the end of a line and almost off the page. So there you go. Yeah, I guess who didn't see this coming at some point? It just, when it happened, it was very sudden. And I guess that gives Lyra one more match to win on her way out. So we had both Roxy and Ilya on Monday Night Raw. They both won their matches. And one would think that is priming them for possible drafts. I think Ilya will lose his championship to Trick, and he will be drafted. And I think Roxy will not get drafted, and that will continue to make her pissed off as a character. Like, I'm the anchor here. I'm what this entire division is about, and you're going to do this. Because there's no way they're going to vacate that championship and have a tournament for the championship when they're also going to have a tournament for the North American Women's Championship. Although it would be very funny and very NXT to have those tournaments going on at the same time and then ask us to try to remember who's in which tournament.
Last thing, you talked about her having to stick around after getting not being drafted and using that. So you said in your report you wrote who has to play Bayley and help out the division for a spell before they get their turn on the bigger stage, probably Perez. And I think you could also play that in terms of character as the opposite, because Bayley was pure babyface and she was the one sticking around and all that. And here we have someone who's going to use that as fuel in a negative way. I mean, as seen as negative and using that as fuel. And I think the comparison is apt because Bayley held as the anchor until they made that transition to the, you know, the Shayna Baszler, Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair stage, or Asuka first. And then here you're kind of shifting away from, I mean, I guess Lyra can go with a bit of Becky Lynch, but Roxanne Perez, and they keep talking about new era, right? I don't know if you heard, Kelly. I don't know if you knew, but WWE is entering a new era. I heard that for maybe the
it's
first
subtle.
Time.
It's subtle.
It's very subtle.
As subtle as wrestling ever is. like that one year where everybody, even guys who weren't booked on Survivor Series, had to say, it's the only time of the year that Raw and SmackDown face each other in direct competition. And they'd have to say the whole thing. I was like, Vince is out-vincing himself, like making them say this crap, like all the way through. Unbelievable.
Sorry, made me think about the Boondocks line when you said the whole thing. I think about Riley. White people, they say the whole word. They say the whole thing like this. Sorry, yeah.
The Boondocks, have we talked about the Boondocks? It's like my favorite thing. I have a Huey shirt. It's like my favorite pop culture thing just about ever. I absolutely adore it.
If we start talking about the Boondocks, this is going to turn into PWT Talks, the Boondocks instead of NXT, so... Yep. We might want to shelve that for VIP or something.
I will say only this. I went to college with one of the main actors on the show and inherited his couch. So now everybody gets to wonder about that, and Bruce gets to hear it off the air later.
Well, look, Kelly, you just mad because your ass is old, all right?
That's factual. That is factual. Okay, where are we? Muted myself and realized it was my turn to talk. Let us talk about the main event, Axiom and Nathan Fraser versus Wolf Dogs. Why now? Why not a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
It seemed like the only reason I got that pick wrong is because it was time for the Wolf Dogs to lose. But I guess every show needs a main event, and this is no different. But they already had the main event segment, so they didn't have to do this week. Whatever. I guess they wanted one more match out of it, and they wanted the hook of Axiom and Nathan Fraser at the very beginning of the show being interviewed and saying, hey, if we can't do this, then we need to split. We need to go our separate ways. And so while it wasn't like an officially sanctioned deal, we knew that they were going to split if they didn't win. For me, this kind of worked because there were reasons to buy that two singles wrestlers who came together would go back to being singles wrestlers. There was that. The part that was tougher to buy is that Bron Breakker is going to be main roster week after week very soon. There's no reason to have him split his focus between the main roster and what he's going to do there and what he's going to do in NXT in the short term. So that part was less tough to believe. And as soon as they got it to a spot in the match, which was, make no mistake, a tornado match, just not called one. It was so annoying to cover. And it wasn't a good match, even though all the work was good, if that makes sense. It wasn't a match, period. It was just a lot of stuff being thrown. It was a Transformers fight. Like, lots of stuff was being clanged together. Story. Axiom and Nathan Fraser. However, when they are given the right type of match, and this should have been it, frankly, they're very good. And they can be good champions, but it makes sense because Braun's a main roster bound guy, and Baron is a main roster guy who has really been down there helping him out for quite a while. So I don't know. I don't know why it didn't happen a few days ago other than to give Corbin the very rare win on WrestleMania weekend. Braun had never won on WrestleMania weekend. Maybe it was just that simple that they wanted to do that and then have these guys get it back tonight. But at any rate, 11:34, Golden Ratio and Phoenix Splash. As soon as Braun got knocked out of the ring, I knew that was it because they're not pinning Braun. Nobody is for a while. And they finished off Corbin. New champs, Bruce.
Yeah, as regarding the match, not much more to add to what you had to say about that. It was really just a chaotic bit of everything. The ref not even, like you said, tornado, just not in name. At one point, Corbin was just holding Fraser in a rear naked choke to watch as he watched Breaker hit a gorilla press or a military press slam on Axiom. The ref is just sitting right there and just decides to count the pin anyway, even though there are two illegal men in the ring. Okay. But let me just put, it's wrestling. Having logic is just too much work. So, what I didn't get is what you said. Why not just do this on Saturday? Why wait until tonight? If you wanted to have a main event, you could have just gone with Natty versus Roxanne Perez. That championship match, yeah, why just make that the main event? It was a great match. So, I guess they wanted to have that hook of the stipulation, like you said. And if they wanted to make that hook, it's more of a question on a weekly TV show if they're going to win or lose than it is on PLE. Because I feel like if they had made that stipulation last week heading into the show, then we probably would have assumed that they would have won on Saturday night. And it would have been hard for them to book that without them winning, having had that kind of laid out. But I still think the right thing to do to just to have them win on Saturday night and have this be the rematch and work a different story from there. And then you could have that miscommunication where Breaker almost speared Corbin and use that to really definitively end their team. Maybe actually Breaker hits the spear instead and they have a match next week and then you have the draft right after. So I question the path they traveled to get here. Not to say that I'm not happy for Fraser and Axiom. I really like the two Axiom. I've liked since his days as a kid. I mean, the guy he doesn't refer to very much, the first NXT Heritage Cup, UK Heritage Cup champion that no one knows his name anymore, that kid guy, I've liked him since then. And I really, it's amazing how we've talked about he gained more charisma once he put on the mask for some reason. And I feel like, in the ring, he's one of my favorites to watch in NXT. So I'm really – I guess I'm more excited for Axiom than I am for Fraser to a certain extent. But nonetheless, I do think that they should at least be able to put on some good matches. My question now is the tag team division. Vic Joseph brought it up. Booker T brought it up today during the family versus whoever they faced off against tonight.
No,
that match. Yeah, no quarter category. About how the tag team division is stacked. Well, it might be stacked, but there's no real contenders right now. There hasn't really been anyone set up beyond this because what happened to the Good Brothers all of a sudden? It felt like we were heading towards Good Brothers and Wolf Dogs, and they weren't even on the show tonight. There wasn't even a hint of them at all. So if the tag team division really is stacked in the, on the men's side, I need them to lay out the story more and tell us why it is stacked and who are the teams we need to watch, because as of right now, I don't think there's really any team that you can look at and say, oh, they're definitely – well, I guess that's why they brought in AOP. Shit, that's right. Shoot, that's right. Kind of forgot about that until now. Final Testament, they came in, and AOP got a welcome back chant afterwards, and they decimated Axiom and Fraser with the Super Collider. Yeah.
I didn't mention it because I forgot to write it down. wrote a lot about it in my report, but didn't write it down. I thought it was funny that we saw AOP coming down the aisle, but the announcers had to pretend they didn't see him yet because they were only supposed to see the guys coming from the ramp, which was the other three members of the Final Testament. Final Testament seems like the exact kind of group that goes to NXT to kick the tires, to have something happen here, because it is – when you're a faction that does not win any major matches, what do you do? And they had a perfectly decent table fest, a weird thing with Bubba Ray Dudley on – I didn't think this was a sentence I was going to say a week ago. Did a thing with Bubba Ray Dudley on WrestleMania. So weird stuff there, I know his, every time he talks, it's, and I always kind of felt that way about him. He just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I was always kind of bugged that he was promoted over D-Von, cause I actually kind of liked D-Von. I didn't love Bubba. He was okay. He's just, now he's got that personality that he's got. Okay, let's go to Javon Evans versus Scripps. This went 5 minutes and 30 seconds. That doesn't sound like anything crazy, but Javon Evans is 19, and this was his first match on the show. So that is a lot of time to give them. So there's a lot of trust in here with Javon Evans. Scripps got too much offense for a guy that's not even promoted as a wrestler, let alone a wrestler who wins. I know that he can create a lot of movement. I know that he's perfectly good in the ring, but that's not the way he's being promoted. So, like, why is he getting a significantly more amount of offense than Robert Stone, who also apparently inconspicuous by his absence. But Javon Evans, not sure what to make of him as a dude yet, just a dude who's happy to be there and is really laid back. And boy, it's cool that I have this job. But he was good. He can really move. He's got height for days on his. He reminds me a lot of Kevin Knight, who wrestles in New Japan, and who can get so much height on a drop kick. You're like, how is that happening? And Kevin Knight is the teammate of Kushida, who throws a great drop kick. But Kevin Knight's looks like it just comes from a different stratosphere than Kushida. So it kind of brought to mind some of him. So I don't know if Kevin Knight's a guy he watches. I have no idea. I don't know the story of Javon Evans, other than he has a finishing move that may or may not be called holding in the road. But at any rate, he wins in 5:30. He can really move. Scripps probably got too much. Whatever. That means we got more Javon Evans. But the pressure's on, because the first thing Vic said is he could be a future centerpiece for NXT. And that is a hell of a thing to say the first time that we see somebody. Like, maybe true, but what a thing to put on us, the fans, and have us expect, Bruce.
Yeah, this man floats. He jumps, and then it seems like he gains an extra boost, like he has a cloud step skill or something, and he just uses it up to get some more boost up in the air. So my drop kick god tier has always been Okada, Styles, Orton, and I think I need to add Javon Evans to that list because that dropkick he hit tonight, it was a thing of beauty with how high he launched himself and just how...
And Hardcore Holly. I hate to say
I know. That's the thing. I didn't say it for a reason, but I do have to respect
it's
that he
so
had
good.
One. It's very good. It's one of the few things he did very well, but I just... Okay. Yes, Hardcore Holly... Again, and someone that I, as you brought up earlier with, I forgot who it was now because
Kevin
it was so
Knight.
Bad. Kevin, no, not Kevin Knight. Someone bad that you want to think, you don't want to think about their personality and their stuff. You just don't want to. Yeah. So, the dropkick though, amazing. The hang time he got on his springboard cutter is just unbelievable. As you wrote, it's impossible. It looks impossible how high he got and somehow didn't float over his opponent and still landed the cutter. Like it just, Cody needs to retire his cutter at this point is what I'm trying to say here. To me, I think, cause I've seen a little bit of him from clips on Level Up and I've heard about it from others. For those of you who aren't aware, he's the former Jay Malachi. I believe that this is someone you can strap the rocket to and he'll be fine. They just need to build him up a little bit. Hone in on what kind of character he's actually going to be. Because as you said, right now, he's just happy to be there, kind of like Roxanne Perez when she first got there. But some of the character development will help. His in-ring, I don't think there's an issue in terms of what he can do. To me, it's always going to go back to what I say with a lot of young wrestlers who have this kind of style. It's the pacing and making sure that they don't forego storytelling just to get their moves in and that they don't just go bang, 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 and end up further or enhance or risking injuring themselves. That, to me, is something to watch for someone with this kind of a style. So that's what I would look for. But, 5 minutes, it's not just a long time to give to someone in their first match on NXT who's 19 years old and then call them a centerpiece for the future. It's a lot to give to Scripps, who, as you said, has not been booked as much of anything, aside from the lackey or the manager of OTM. OTM has great music, by the way. Just every time it comes on, I'm like, yeah, this is some good stuff.
And Scripps is awesome with OTM, by the way.
Yeah.
I love what he brings to the group, but, I mean, he's not supposed to – he's supposed to stand behind them.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So that's the only negative I see is how much offense and how long it took to get Scripps. But, I mean – you could also argue it's a 19-year-old making his debut, and this is kind of a guy who's been around for somehow, 3-4 years by now at this point? So I can't believe he's actually – whatever. So you could argue that, but I do think it would have been better to have him come in and win a more of a competitive squash than what we had tonight.
My go-to is always hey, Victor and Connor were there for 11 years. So it can happen to you, folks. Hardcore Holly was in the company for like 18 years. Hardcore Holly. That's how long a great dropkick can take you, kids. So so learn your dropkick, and you too can be guard. Hardcore Holly.
Dropkicks. AJ Styles has been in the WWE for 8 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, 2016 Royal Rumble was when he debuted.
16, huh?
Wow.
Yeah. For those of you too young to know this yet, once you turn about 27, everything that happens in the next 30 years, you think happened in the same, like, two-year span. I'm like, oh, yeah, that just happened. And I might be talking about I might be talking about what I ate that day, and I might be talking about I'm going to use 9/11, but I'm not going to use 9/11. You know what? Why would I bring that up?
January 6th.
January 6th. That's what I meant. that thing that was tragic-ish, but not we're in a weird area. Let's go to the emails. Jared Wager. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit, number one, inspired by the Wolf Dogs. What is the best Strange Bedfellows tag team in NXT history? The Wolf Dogs.
Wolf Dogs, yeah.
Great question, but I do think that we are seeing the answer right now. if you want strange bedfellows, you kind of have to go to the main roster. On the NXT, they don't try to do strange bedfellows. They try to make teams that mesh and teams that work, and you're not intended to be there long enough to be in a strange bedfellows team like the Awesome Truth. I don't know.
Canon X-Pac, Team
yeah.
Hell No.
Oh, yes. Oh, God. Yes. Some real good ones there. Kane was going to be in strange bedfellows team. Mm-hmm. He was destined to be because, like, what else could you do with him at that point? And it all worked. Like, it really all worked. So anybody else come to mind for you that's even really very close?
I mean, you could argue at the time Rated RKO was a strange bedfellows tag team when they formed because of how each of them were booked, especially Edge at the time. As the characters, not in terms of their place on the card, but the characters. I'm trying to think of a women's tag team that might have been a strange bedfellows one, but I can't.
Roxanne Perez and Dakota Kai?
It's hard to think about what
Dakota Kai had a personality and Roxanne, and not Roxanne Perez, Raquel Rodriguez.
And
Dakota Kai.
It seems like more of the women's ones are more one-offs than anything. I guess the Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez at the time was probably the only one I could think about on the women's side. Yeah. It's tougher. You're right. You have to go to Raw SmackDown, and it's really more so in the past. It's specifically anything with Kane, for sure. You know, Awesome Truth is another one, and we're seeing the resurgence now. So, yeah, I think those are the ones.
Okay, number two from JB is Dragunov and Roxanne Perez both made appearances in the Raw after Mania. I believe they even mentioned that both would be involved in the draft announced for the end of the month. I think they said they're both available for it. I did watch Raw. I don't always do that, but this company's putting on some pretty good shows right now. So I did. JB continues, does this mean that both the men's and women's champions will be on the main roster in a matter of weeks? If so, will they pull double duty with the titles or drop them before the draft? It seems like an odd recession to have Perez win the title back if she's just going to the main roster in a few weeks, unless the goal was to get the title from a heel to a face other than Lyra. Also, how will NXT be involved in the draft overall this year? Dragunov will probably lose to Trick at spring break in a few weeks. Yes, I would say that is almost certain. I'm going to also guess that JB wrote that part of the question at the very end because he saw that happen after he had drafted most of this email and knew, oh gosh, the show answered my own question for me, which he does because JB will send one halfway through the show. Then he'll send one and is like, okay, obviously I know the answer to this now. They're not. Okay. So Wayne McMahon was there. And Triple H was in charge of NXT, you would have champions get called up a lot because they would see the same stuff and a lot of the same people, and Vince wouldn't necessarily care what was going on down there. He would just grab who he needed, which, fine. But can't you do a tiny bit more planning than that? Give somebody a little more warning than that? And
it worked one time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't. I mean, you're going to take Karrion Kross, who I know it's Karrion Kross. He's not that great, but he was undefeated. He was like 18-0, 18 more wins than Bobby Fish on this show. I still love taking slice.
Hey, we're tied with Bobby Fish for the singles record in for singles wins in NXT after all.
Yeah, I'm right with him. So Karrion Kross gets called up. Where's something that's like sub early Farouk, sub Warlord, and he jobs to Jeff Hardy. And no offense to Jeff Hardy, because at his best, he was awesome, but he wasn't at his best, and he wasn't high on the card. So that's not going to happen with Triple H and Shawn Michaels. It's just they're going to have some semblance of working together here. Because frankly, it's just a healthier relationship than any relationship that Vince McMahon is in. So I think that we can trust that they'll either drop their championships or they will move on in a better, more interesting way. I love tournaments, but I also think that NXT should have less of them. So there you go. Anything else on this one, Bruce?
Roxanne Perez did say the only way she's losing the title is if she gets drafted. So they did put that out there as a bit of not just bait, but going back to what you said earlier about her, if she doesn't get drafted, she can use that as a motivation, the fuel. It worked one time with Vince, and I think what Vince forgot is with that one time, it was with John Cena. None of these other times involved someone on this caliber of John Cena, nor did they put someone over like they did Kevin Owens using John Cena. So I think that was the biggest failure in terms of, well, there's a lot of failures in what happened in the previous regime, but regarding the usage of people from NXT on Raw and SmackDown, of course, the big one we always turn to is there is a blood feud going on between Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano and Aleister Black and Ricochet are in the midst of a feud, and suddenly the two are teaming against each other or against other teams on Raw? Like you said, there's going to be more of a cohesiveness between Raw and NXT right now. And to me, the reason why you can't have Roxanne Perez move up and the story is to go with her not being drafted and sticking on NXT, because unlike previous drafts, it doesn't seem like that if you declare yourself for the draft and you don't get drafted, then you're not on the show. It seems more like there's a pool, kind of like a Rule 5 draft in baseball where teams put up a pool of participants not as high caliber as what you'll have in the WWE draft, of course, and then teams can select from that pool. The reason why you don't have Roxanne Perez get drafted is there really is no built-in contenders for a title, not to mention they're also having to crown another women's champion with the Women's North American Championship that they reminded us about tonight. So you're going to have a bulk of the women's competitors already caught up in crowning this new title, which leaves Roxanne Perez with not many people to drop that title to. Doesn't give you time to build up a contender or a believable person to take that title off of her. That rematch with Lyra Valkyria is obviously not going to happen because not only is she injured in story, but she's involved with now Tatum Paxley. So Roxanne Perez beat Natalya tonight. Who is she going to face? Is the winner of the Sol Ruka match next week? I don't know. Is it going to be Ariana Grace? I don't think that's going to happen. Is it going to be Carmen Petrovic trying to get revenge for Natalya? I don't know. But none of those names, Bold Advice, none of them seem like they should be fighting for the Women's Championship right now. And honestly, they seem more apt to be in the tournament for the Women's North American Championship. The only person, and you can't do this in 2 weeks, is Julia. And that when the moment hits, when her music hits and she makes that debut, it's going to be that charisma that just oozes off of her. It's going to be like when Nakamura made his entrance at TakeOver Dallas. There's just going to be a feeling in the building. That's who you take the title from, or that's who you give the title to from Roxanne Perez, but you don't do that in 2 weeks. That is something you build toward. I don't want to say take as long as the Great American Bash, but you don't do it in 2 weeks. You have to give it more time than that. And you have to, whether it's she surprises Roxanne Perez after her next title defense, whether Roxanne Perez is in an interview or out of an interview, giving an in-ring promo, there's an open challenge, something. I feel like you need to build up to it. Or what I would do, people know she's coming. Vignettes, build her up. And do the vignettes where you're not really even seeing seeing her face, seeing what she's doing, but build the hype for her. Get her ready. Get the fans ready to accept her. And then have her be the one to take the title off of Roxanne Perez. I don't know who else.
And in the meantime, have Roxanne Perez get more and more paranoid,
mm-hmm.
clutch her title mm-hmm. more every
mm-hmm.
week,
just like
and
you did
look
tonight.
Around her shoulder every week,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because Julia is the threat over her shoulder that she knows she can't. She's the persistent boss that she knows is coming, and there's no way around it.
I mean, we can't have a second person take the final boss nickname from Mako Satomura after all. But
yeah.
And the thing about Roxanne Perez, Roxanne Perez as a heel is playing a weasel heel in terms of how she looks at the title and clutches it, but she doesn't play weasel heel in terms of how she gains her victory. She is still someone, regardless of her size, who is going out there to whoop your ass.
All right, JB's email has a lot more steam in it. Number three, I'm not going to lie. When the music played after Frazer and Axiom won the tag titles, I thought the team coming out was the Motor City Machine Guns, as it was recently announced that they're free agents. Personally, this would be a much more appealing theoretical option to me than the Final Testament. I also think Saban and Shelley would be great coaches for the NXT roster. Yeah, we won't argue there. They definitely can. Shelley's a great wrestler in addition to being a pretty strong heel, I think. I really like what I've been able to see of Alex Shelley over the years. Much of that being on New Japan with the Time Splitters. He and Kushida doing a lot of stuff together in the junior division there. So a lot of it there. And I've dropped into TNA a couple of times in my life, and it was never there very long, but one of the times Shelley and Saban were doing a lot of stuff then, and I don't remember if they were together, apart, or both during the time that I watched, but I just remember them tearing up the X Division and that being very cool. We did see Alex Shelley in, I believe, a tournament with Kushida. Uh-huh. And they didn't – I don't think they said the Time Splitters nickname because they didn't want to give us the hint that Alex Shelley was sticking around. But they wanted to do this thing. So, but Shelley did do NXT and teamed with Kushida. And I think maybe they won one and lost one, or maybe they just lost the first one. But at any rate, they had a great appearance. So, yeah, more exciting in theory. But I also think Axiom and Frazer need to work a match that is not just a frenetic. Oh, I want them to work against AOP because I want them to learn how to work and not just be.
What is AOP? Never mind.
I know. But I will say that AOP was the right team at the right time. Mm-hmm. For DIY and the Revival. When they had a triple threat, those three teams, ooh, like that's one of my favorite triple threat tag team matches of all time. Mm-hmm. Because DIY and Revival hated each other, but they knew that neither team had it in them to beat AOP on their own. So they had members of each of those two teams doing their finishing moves together in one of the biggest, greatest pieces of fan service ever. So I think AOP can be the right team in the right situation. It's not going to be a match that sets the world on fire, but I think it's a match that could really, really help Axiom and Frazer show a different side of what they can do. Anything more on JB's third point?
It's funny because for me, my experience with the Motor City Machine Guns comes from a lot of TNA from the late aughts into, you know, that time period where they were really hot. And even before that, when they were both, as you said, tearing up the X Division as singles wrestlers. And Alex Shelley has always been a perpetual babyface, in my opinion. I know he can play a good heel. He does. But whenever I watch him, I just always see him as a baby face. So, but Saban, as you said, does play a good heel. And they did Shelley? Yeah, I think they both had world title runs, so they also had that experience. While I do agree that it would have been exciting, I'm not sure if WWE is going to sign 40-year-old wrestlers to go to NXT. I think it would be more apt for them to go to Raw SmackDown right away. Even though NXT is the crowd and the audience that would more know about the Motor City Machine Guns than a Raw SmackDown crowd. Now, that again, it would be more exciting, but I don't think it made much sense. Even when the rumor started, I didn't think it made much sense for the Motor City Machine Guns to sign with WWE, to sign an NXT. One, Alex Shelley is EMS, I believe, full-time still. So he does that while he wrestles, and being able to have his schedule as he needs it, as he wants it, and not have to have to deal with the travel of WWE and all that, I think makes much more sense for him. And
wow. Is Alex Shelley an even better person than I assumed he was? That's fantastic.
Yes.
I had
yes.
no idea.
Yes.
That's
so,
right.
No, he's really, no, exactly. He's a baby face. And that's why I can't take him as a heel in wrestling, because I know he's a real baby face, right? He's just a really great guy. Not to say that to be a successful heel, you have to be, or a successful baby face, that you have to be a great person, or a successful heel, you have to be an asshole all the time. But it's just that, you know, he is such a good person. And people I know that have met him at fan and have had fan interactions with him just cannot say enough nice things about Alex Shelley. So, again, while it would have been great to have them here, I don't think it made much sense for them and for WWE, to be honest. With AOP, I know it's kind of funny and doesn't really make much sense, but the Super Collider always tickled me. I know it actually hurts more on the powerbomb than the actual colliding of the two, but I just thought that it's just, I don't know why. It always just amuses me. AOP, so that, when we go back to that era of Black and Gold,
I'm surprised the Super Collider still exists. I really am. It doesn't look like it hurts, but they keep doing it. It's amusing.
Okay. Very amusing. When we go back to that era of the tag team division, the men's tag team division, there was one team also that we can't forget about during that time, a little foursome here, and that was American Alpha. And the battles and the matches that those four put on with each other, some of the best tag team matches in NXT history. So I just want to make sure that we give American Alpha their flowers as well, as we see Chad Gable getting a more prominent run now and most likely having a feud coming up with Sami Zayn, the new Intercontinental Champion. And I will admit, I did get choked up watching Sami Zayn last night get his flowers from the crowd and just how he was reacting and his shirt and a nod to his wife. And just, talk about one of the good guys in life. It's Sami Zayn, right? So to me, he's been brought up a couple times tonight in different ways, but Sami Zayn, just one of those true baby faces. I forgot what the original question was, but yeah, let's move on.
Let's indeed. I agree. Sammy's the guy. That first night, that was, oh man, what a big thing. The only thing I thought was, would they have put that match on the second night if they would have known that Gunther's reign was going to end at exactly 666 days? Like, when they said 666 days, I thought that Pat McAfee, who has very little filter, would be like, that's obvious that he's the beast. something like that. Something Mark of the Beast. I was like, that is just...
666 days, huh?
Yeah. Corey Graves is smart enough to think it. Pat McAfee is dumb enough to say it. So, like, you know that it might come out of one of their mouths. So, but it didn't. Number four, with the Wolf Dogs losing, I think that signals that Breaker and possibly even Corbin are headed to the main roster at the draft. It 100% does, yes. Number five, I don't really agree with Trick giving the amount of praise that he did to Melo only 3 days after finishing a highly contested blood feud that but that also signals to me that Melo is also to the main roster at the draft. I would say no doubt to Melo going up at the draft. You could quibble with the way that Trick put him over tonight. I would say you could do something like you have Trick say, Melo says he opened the door for me. But the truth is, he cracked the door open for me. I kicked it the hell open. Something like that. That would maybe be more apt to use in this storyline, given that Carmelo gives himself all the credit for making Trick a superstar in addition to himself. That said, I don't think any harm was done here. I think that the character of Trick Williams should recognize that his former best friend did help him get to that level. You could really present this either way, Bruce.
The thing to me, and I think if it was an isolated situation here with Trick, it wouldn't be such an issue. But one thing I've noticed ever since Paul Levesque really took over is so many of these promos after these big matches, they spend time giving respect to their opponent, even when their opponent was a big-time heel or did dastardly things to them. We saw with Cody Rhodes, we talk about Roman Reigns, even through all the stuff that the Bloodline put him through, right? And I keep seeing this pattern in these promos, and we saw that tonight. The only person I feel like didn't do that was Roxanne Perez, but correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think she really gave flowers to Lyra Valkyrie and gave her respect. But we're seeing that with other folks. And I guess what I've been thinking about this a bit in terms of why they've made this switch. And there is a relatability factor to where, you know, when you go through a challenge, you want to give respect to how the challenge made you grow. And if you overcame it, how you overcame that challenge. Right. But not every babyface needs to be like that. And two, it doesn't have to be in all these promos to me. And that's why I did quibble with that a bit too, because Carmelo, in a kayfabe sense, tried to ruin this man's career. And he come out here and he's saying, now I want to give this man respect and his due. Like, dude, you need him in the face to beat him because this dude tried to ruin you and you're going to come out here and give him respect. That is the part that kind of I found to be a bit, like on the email, a bit odd, and I didn't really agree with it too much. That was the one thing I forgot to mention earlier about the promo, was that the respect thing and how I've been seeing this pattern. And I hope it's something that they recognize isn't going to work all the time and really shouldn't be done so much as it is and so often as it is being done right now. And hopefully they make the switch, because if it was someone like Dragunov, I could see that where, you know, after you beat Dragunov, hard-fought battles and whatnot, then you want to give him his proper respect. Cool, but not someone that tried to end your career or at least tried to prevent you from advancing in your career, right? So that I do quibble with that part too.
And there are options there, right? Because you can say, yeah, you give yourself all this credit for bringing me into this world. Well, you tried to take me out of it. I mean, I'm not quibbling with the fact that you helped me get here. I'm quibbling with the fact that you tried to shut the door on me after you took me through it. Yeah, lots of options there. Number six, the final point from JB. I heard a rumor. It's not a rumor. This is a real thing that happened. So let me say this another way. NXT is adding another women's title to the division. The amount of titles in NXT is far too much for the size of the roster. If we're also considering the Heritage Cup and floating women's tag titles. As always, love the show and go VIP. This is a weird one for me, because in general, I think that every company that I pay even passing interest in is fraught with too many titles. I think there are too many titles in almost every company, certainly the ones I'm paying attention to.
especially Japan.
Oh, God, it's horrifying how many there are in New Japan. Like, I watch every show, every single show, and there are still championships that I forget because they're like, there'll be six-man tag champions, but sometimes they'll go, and I kid you not, 7 months without having a six-man championship match. So it's like, these guys have been champions for 10 months. I'm like, 10 months and two matches? Pretty sweet stuff.
Tony D'Angelo and Channing Stacks Lorenzo title reign. Okay, I got you.
Right, right. And it, with that in New Japan, it's even worse because, like, most of New Japan's matches are tag matches.
Yep.
So just need to book those three guys in a tag match. And they just recently vacated those titles. Rather than have them lose them, they had them win a match and then vacate them so they wouldn't have to job Kazuchika Okada. Okie dokie, okie dokie. Let's get away from it. The reason this question is weird for me is that I actually don't hate this decision because it's valuable for young men and women in NXT to get to practice holding a championship, practice being a champion, all the things that brings, the carrying a show, carrying a division, all those things. It's worthwhile to see how somebody carries a division. This is the kind of championship that could go away in short order because they go through a bad period where they just don't have a lot of great women, and all of a sudden there's no division to be had. I don't foresee that happening, but I think it's a lot more sustainable than a tag team championship, because a tag team championship with a small division is way tougher to sustain with real challengers than a singles division. So I, the immediate moment was fraught for me because I just thought that's a lot. And they just got rid of a women's championship in NXT less than a year ago. But it does seem like something that will be, that will have purpose, especially since Julia is going to win the title and go on an Asuka-like streak. So you might as well have a secondary championship that the women can fight over, Bruce.
Yeah, I do quibble a bit with the framing of the email, because I do think that there is a sizable portion of the women's division right now who is sort of middling in the middle card and not being positioned to move up, right? So when they made the announcement, just off the top of my head, I was thinking, yeah, Fallon Henley, you have Kiana James, you have Sol Ruka, you have Lash Legend, you have Kalani Jordan, you have Jasmine Nix now, you have JC Jane, you have Thea Hill. Just right there, I've named nine people, right? You have Jada Parker, that's a 10th. Like, Carmen Petrovic is there. You have an Italian now there that could go for another title. Like, I feel like there are a lot of women there to choose from and have this tournament with, right? And yes, you could do Julia, but I feel like if you make Julia the champion here, you have to have her, give her sort of a Jade Cargill TBS championship like run where she's dominant over a long period of time, which would then make it less likely that they have a challenger built up for Roxanne Perez, aside from kind of an open challenge or someone coming down from Raw or SmackDown. Because again, going back to what I said earlier, I don't really see a definitive challenger built for her. You could always go back to Blair Davenport, I guess, to a certain extent, but the last time they had a feud, Roxanne Perez came out on top. So, I guess for me, the concern I have has more to do with the women's championship than it does with the women's North American championship. And I feel like there are plenty of women to put there without necessarily hampering the main event picture in the women's division, because a lot of those women I named have already fought for and lost women's championship matches. And going back to your first point, it's not just that you want people to get experience being champions, but it's you want them to get experience in having main event matches and having championship style matches and having matches with stakes that are high as championships. That's a different kind of experience than just having your regular match on TV or even your regular PLE match. So it's valuable for a lot of these women to have that experience again. Some of the women I named have been champions before, whether they're tag team champion or tag team champion. Actually, I don't think any of them have won the women's championship. So, if Lyra Valkyrie goes back, that's another person. There's Tatum Paxley right there too. There are just a lot of women right there in the middle that you can put in there. Ariana Grace, another one, Gigi Dolan. Like, I just keep naming off names, right, that definitely aren't in the tier to challenge Roxanne Perez, but could definitely be in the tier to challenge for the North American championship. So, I feel like I'm more positive on this announcement and in the long-term outlook, because some of these women, while I do think they'd be fine on Raw or SmackDown, I don't know how necessarily high on the card they would get, whereas this title gives them something to fight for on the show and gives them a reason to stay in NXT and gives them more time on the show. I just feel like there is more, I have more of a positive outlook on the announcement and the future of this than definitely the email, and definitely, I think, from what you were saying earlier, too.
Keep it rolling with emails. Asam White comes with three quickies. I will give quick thoughts on all of them and throw to you. Hello, NXT gang. Number one, what do you think about HBK writing Drew Gulak out this week? I don't know a lot about the allegations yet, but it's not a bad way to go. When, especially when you are making a big production of WWE, the new direction, whatever, I already have forgotten the branding, which is embarrassing. They keep hitting it.
The Triple H era, the new era.
The new era. Okay, so.
They've been so subtle about it after all.
Don't want somebody there. He's messing that up. This one was hard for me to hear because I do like Drew Gulak a lot in terms of in the ring and what he can do as a character. They didn't do it in a way that they can't just bring him back, but they did not mention him once. Number two, is the Ridge Holland stuff supposed to be serious or funny? It seems he's in a different world from when he took out Ilya Dragunov last year. I think it's supposed to be serious, but him slamming the... I don't know! He's supposed to be serious about the fact that he hurt yet another guy, this time slamming their hand in a door. But how is that not funny to me? if there's somebody who's just prone to injuring people, and you made a movie about that, it 100% is a comedy. Ridge Holland is a drama character who does not know that he's in a comedy. That is my answer. Number three, do you see a change in metaphor soon with Lash's behavior with Trick a couple of weeks ago and Oro tonight? I don't even know what a change would look like because I don't know if I'm supposed to cheer or boo them. They're ostensibly heels. But I like them, and so does everyone else. So I don't know. I don't know if. I mean, they're not really heels, then, are they? Because we all just really like them. on Azan's mailbag here.
Yeah, not much as the first one. It's really you could even argue as WWE that his name wasn't on the Tron because he wasn't at the show tonight. We just wanted to put the people that were at the show. Okay, I can accept that explanation if they end up bringing him back for whatever reason. Why did I forget the second and third point all of a sudden? Wow. Let's see if I can remember this. What was the second and third point? I forgot all of a sudden, and I had it in my head too.
Let me tell you, somebody just tried to get into our email who does not live here, so I went away from it. Number two, is the Ridge...
Don't worry about it.
Oh.
It said Massachusetts. What the hell?
I told you I'm in Boston.
Oh, there's Nate. Nate, you're not here. You don't even go here, to quote.
I don't even go here tonight, no. But I'm here. I'm hanging out just in the background after losing money in the casino.
Okay.
Successful night.
I'm going to need you to stay there and cry into your whiskey. Part two was Ridge Holland stuff. Funnier, serious. Number three, metaphor.
So the funnier, serious aspect. I think the last time we asked this was about those Von Wagner, Mr. Stone segments where he was rehabbing after having a skull crush by Braun Breaker in the steel steps. And the fact that we could not stop cackling every time they would do those segments when it was supposed to be serious. Ridge Holland, the whole slamming that – my thing was, after slamming the hand of Cruz, he came back in and looked down, and he just had the same look on his face as when he was mad. And
like he threw his hands up like, I heard another guy. It's of mice and men. I mean, that's really what it's really bizarre what they're doing.
Oh, what a sad ending to that book. Yeah, and then metaphor.
Yeah,
sure.
Of mice and men, he killed the girl. Sorry, everyone. I brought you down.
With metaphor, I'm not sure if it's supposed to necessarily signal that they're going to have some kind of break. What I think was they're becoming more confident in their abilities outside of the Heritage Cup, it looks like, right? And Lash having that match for the title, how she's looked since then, with Noam Dar still having some success and having good matches, and now he's going to face Dijak. And I feel like, you know, they were pretty good hosts on Saturday with all their segments and having the different outfits and kind of catering to those. I just felt like in that opening montage where they, people that were, or you know, they were basically imitating the people in those matches. I really liked that. For me, I think why he's asking this is because of how Oro Mensah reacted tonight. And that has to do with the fact that he got punked on Saturday. And I'm glad that Mensah's talking himself up and saying he's going to be the one to beat Obafemi. But I'm going to just look.
Metaphor's reaction was hilarious. Where they're all like,
yeah. Just wait for you to calm down. Yeah, I just want you to calm down. Just how far Obafemi throws that man across the ring and how high is going to be pure art. So that's what I'm looking forward to in terms of Mensah getting in there, being all confident, and then realizing he can't do anything to Femi, who's just laughing at him, hits him with one slap across the chest, picks him up and beels him literally across the ring to the turnbuckles. I just, you know, that to me is just, that's great wrestling right there.
Kevin Cantani comes at us with this email. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. While I don't mean to take us back in time, we are in a new era. After all, am I the first one to say that? And I just wanted to pay a homage to a very strong Stand and Deliver. That said, I thought tonight advanced the major storyline similar to last night's Raw. I liked Ivar and the Final Testament showing up at various points in the show, and I'm now on the edge of my seat awaiting the split within metaphor. Don't you even speak that into existence. I don't want that to happen. He continues.
Seat, Kevin.
What storyline intrigues you the most? Coming out of Stand and Deliver, with the War Dogs losing, he means Wolf Dogs, but apparently he also watches New Japan like I do, where the War Dogs are a real thing. Are both Braun and Baron headed back up, or to still have some things to do in NXT? Thanks as always, go VIP and listen to AYB. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. I think it's funny that everybody's asking if Baron has more stuff to do, because he's the one who's already there, but I think they'll both go up. They don't seem to be setting up anything for him. And if this week taught us anything, it's that if you are going to be there for a while, they are setting up stuff for you to do. So it doesn't seem like there's anything left for him. Unless he'll have a mini feud with one of the new tag team champions, which I guess they could do. The storyline that intrigues me the most coming out of Stand and Deliver, obviously we know the top of the card will be good, but they are starting a new thing, so it's nothing crazy. I don't know. We've seen it all with those guys. And then I'm looking at the other things, and I'm like, Chase U gambling, we've seen that before. New Quarter Catch Crew with the family, I don't know. That could be interesting, but we don't know who will be involved. Gacy and Ridge, maybe? They started a lot of weird stuff, so I don't know how they
are.
Oh, there it is. But that's going to be 1 week of Dijak crushing Dar. So it's like, how excited am I supposed to get? Dijak looked so enormous in that scene because everyone in Metaphor is the same freaking height.
Except
they're
Lash.
All the same height. Yeah, Lash is a tiny bit taller, but otherwise they're all the same height. And Dijak is not the same height. Bruce.
Yeah, well, regarding Metaphor, I don't want to see them break up. While I thought that they might have been hinting at it a couple weeks ago, I feel like this is one of the groups that's kind of hoping to anchor NXT into this new era. My subtleties there. And, you know, we've seen growth from all of them while they've been in the faction. And I don't think you want to split them up as they're still growing and still having good reactions and still doing good work when they're on the screen. So that, to me, would be a bit of a promotional malpractice here. Regarding the Wolf Dogs, the thing with Baron Corbin, no matter if he stays on NXT, if he goes to Raw, if he goes to SmackDown, I think this was the zenith of his career. He's kind of locked into a place as a singles wrestler, regardless of where he goes. And that's got to be basically the role that Dijak is in right now. If not, he basically bounced between Von Wagner and Dijak in his role, wherever he goes, Raw, SmackDown, or NXT. So, to me, if he goes, he goes. If he stays, he stays. If he split from Breaker, I'm not sure how much he adds as a singles character to the show, but you can always use someone like Corbin on NXT, not just because he has that connection from starting in NXT and now coming back, but this man is going to give you a solid match, work safely, get crowd heat on him, so he works as that kind of good gatekeeper heel. And it's going to be good to teach a lot of those young wrestlers, especially the wrestlers who are coming up to the PC, who are signed from other sports and have no wrestling experience, because he came through that system as well. Football player, Golden Gloves, no wrestling experience, and he's had over a decade-long career in WWE now. Wow, to think about that. He's been in the ring with a lot of the greats. He's won a couple titles. Yeah, he hasn't been the main event, main champion, but he's had a nice, solid career, getting paid money. So I think his value is probably better in NXT, but as an on-screen character and where he's placed on the card, I don't think it really would change wherever he goes.
All right. Our last email is from Brian Alston. Hello, Kelly and Doc Bruce. What? Blog Talk is actually working this week? A great weekend of wrestling. Did you see the Out the Mud and Street Profits Snickers commercial? It was fine. At least Bronco Nima and Lucian Price got some national TV time. I liked it pretty well, actually.
Yeah.
Ilya Dragunov wrestled on last night's Raw, pinning Shinsuke Nakamura. Ilya was referred to as the NXT champion, had his on-screen graphics, and wore the belt. As always, Dragunov looked good. I believe this is the seventh time an acknowledged NXT champion has wrestled on Raw or SmackDown. I'm not counting wrestlers like Seth Rollins, who was the NXT champion. While being in the Shield on Raw, I don't think it was ever mentioned on TV. Question, please rate the other NXT champions' brief experiences on the main roster. I'm going to say right away, I definitely didn't see all of these because I never miss NXT, but I drop in and out of the main roster. Adrian Neville, tag team match before TakeOver Fatal 4-Way. Kevin Owens, series with John Cena. Tommaso Ciampa, tag team match, very controversial. Ciampa teamed with enemy Johnny Gargano.
God.
Houston Cross, regular matches. War a Helmut. Braun Breaker, feud with Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler, feud with Braun Breaker. Don't forget to listen to the VIP exclusive podcast NXT 8 years back. Kelly and Tom Stout discussed the April 13th, 2016 edition. A future TNA Impact World Champion makes her first appearance. Well, I've already figured out who that is, even though I haven't seen that match yet.
There's only one her who's won that world championship. So
there you go.
There's one still. Yeah.
Okay.
I was thinking Jordynne Grace won it for a second, but she didn't.
Nope. Okay. So I'll just do quick hits. Adrian Neville, tag team match before a four-way. Perfectly fine way for them to fill some time on Raw and get something out of four-way. Fatal four-way was a really, oh, God, that was a good match. Neville had just a fantastic reign in general. And Fatal 4-Way really, really moved the story forward in a way that it had to be moved forward as he leaned but did not ever completely turn heel, which was almost more maddening than a clean heel turn. It was great. Kevin Owens' series with John Cena was fantastic in every way. Tommaso teaming with Gargano at that time is...
reprehensible.
Yeah. Karrion Kross, regular matches for a Helmut. Also terrible because potentially worse, except he's not as popular as Gargano and Ciampa were or he's not as respected, let's say that. which, I mean, it's just true. So, yeah, he should not have gone up there and lost some weak-ass normal match in a handful of minutes, not even a handful, to Jeff Hardy when he was doing an undefeated thing and had to lose his championship to somebody who was supposed to be overcoming the unbeatable. Braun Breaker and Dolph Ziggler, that stuff is perfectly fine. Also, I mean, it wasn't, like, good, but it was... It was fine to promote them in order to promote the show, but the Owens stuff is easily number one with a bullet, and the Neville stuff made sense given all they were trying to do. You could probably leave the rest on the pile. anything else on this email, Bruce. Otherwise, we will go to the last few things we haven't talked about on the show.
So obviously, they're talking about only the men's championship because I think we'd have to talk about Charlotte Flair and then also Roxanne Perez from last night. The only one I don't remember off the top of my head is the Adrian Neville one. But while we're on the subject of the Fatal 4-Way, really wanted to give props to TJ Wilson, Tyson Kidd, because the run of his career was that year and really culminating with that Fatal 4-Way match. Everyone involved in that 4-Way match, Neville, Zane, Kidd, and Breeze, just fantastic. One of my favorite Fatal 4-Way matches. And I think this, and I believe the next one was Our Evolution, if I remember correctly. Like, this was really the time that TakeOver started becoming TakeOvers, in my opinion, because they really set it off from here. And unfortunately, you know, career cut short by injury. Really, really doing really good stuff as a producer, though. So at least he was able to transition there nicely. But really, if you haven't seen these, just go back and watch that year of Tyson Kidd in NXT. Fantastic stuff, to the point that in this match I was pulling for him to actually win and become that NXT champion. Just really good stuff out of him that entire year and out of the four men in general leading up to this match, and how each character really, even Tyler Breeze, I mean, that pretentious character, how he was able to really get you to believe that he really wanted that title. And the character work, the storytelling within the match itself was just fantastic. But yeah, really just wanted to make sure I gave Tyson Kidd his props. And yeah, Kevin Owens, John Cena, that's the one time it actually worked as they intended. And it's no surprise to me that it hasn't really since then because of who was involved.
Tyson Kidd wearing those big, obnoxious Beats headphones in white.
Uh-huh.
And having like halfway normal conversations with Natalia that also proved that he was just a douche. Oh, God. Just that stuff was really way more fun than it should have been. I liked it a lot. Okay, so we got Fallon
Real quick, Kelly.
Go ahead.
I just seen on Twitter, WWE posted, it says, exclusive, Bron Breakker reflects on his time in NXT and thanks to NXT Universe one last time.
Oh, well, I guess surprise is dead. But none of us are surprised. That was something that could have happened. You know what? Maybe they just wanted him to have this match in front of Full Sail. Not Full Sail, but, you know, Performance. Wherever they're doing this thing. Maybe he wanted to have that there, and they thought, oh, yeah, well, he was the linchpin of our... Not that he had the best of reigns, but he did a lot of good stuff that was not even remotely related to his championship reign. So maybe they just wanted to do that for him there. It's weird that we're saying goodbye to a guy that I feel like just got there, because in my mind, everything that is NXT 2.0 to now happened at the same time. Again, being old, there are three matches we didn't talk about. Fallon Henley and Kehlani Jordan lost to Kiana James and Izzy Dame. I will only say Izzy Dame needs some work, but Kiana James pinned Fallon Henley in this one. I would say Fallon Henley was turning heel, except for the fact that everybody is turning heel if you're a woman on this show. The family defeated No Quarter Catch Crew. Once again, never mentioned Drew Gulak. Damon Kemp gets pinned by Luca Crucifino, who I believe scores his first pinfall on this show, putting him one ahead of Bobby Fish. 3 minutes and 59 seconds. I think that's leading to Tony D going for the championship against No Quarter Catch Crew. Brinley Reese loses to Jada Parker in 7 minutes and 50 seconds. And I won't share it with you, but I got a direct tweet from somebody who was real thirsty about Jada Parker. And I get it, and I will say no more about it.
I understand.
Yep. That
she can hit that finisher on me, and I'll be fine. Well, I won't be fine, but I'll be fine. You know what I'm saying?
No, eventually you will.
exactly.
A hip attack, and Booker T goes, "Oh God, that looked like a drive-by, man." And it did. Like it looked really, really vicious in a way that hip attacks usually don't. So that was very cool. That is it for matches. If you've got any comment on those, go ahead. Otherwise, I will go to a few backstage segments.
Look, Jada Parker, yes, just yes. Brinley Reese, she has character. And something I've been saying about her, though, is that in the ring, there's nothing. Just very bland in terms of style. I feel like there's not enough cohesion between her character and what she does in the ring. And what she does in the ring, while if it does match with her character, it's still a bit bland. I want to see a little more from her. Idris Enofe has more muscle in his one nipple than I do on my whole body. That aside, if we go back to the other match, we have the family and North Quarter Catch Crew. I think the interesting thing here to notice is that the family won with a shatter machine. I don't know if you caught that, but, they used the shatter machine tonight to get the victory behind the ref's back because the ref was doing something, I think, with...
I did, because I didn't think the finish was imminent.
Oh, right. So they hit the shatter machine, basically, and then got the pin with Chris Ofino, better than Bobby Fish in terms of victories. But when it comes to tag team victories, though, Bobby Fish is going to have a lot more.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be a long time.
Yeah, a long time. But so I thought Chris Ofino looked good. I did see there was a singles match he was in not too long ago where he also looked pretty good, getting a lot of stuff in a short amount of time. This match also wasn't that long. My thing with this team of Stacks and Chris Ofino is between the two of them, they both seem like they prefer having that sort of fast-paced style, but one of them is going to have to act as more of the heavy at times, and I think that'll be Chris Ofino. And then regarding North Quarter Catch Crew, Damon Kemp in that backstage promo earlier in the night just was not good. But that is...
He's awful. Oh, God. I want to be able to say something different about Damon Kemp, but... Isn't somebody working with him?
Well, if we've seen between him and his brother, they just don't have charisma. And that obviously comes through. And the last thing on the North Quarter Catch Crew I will say is Charlie Dempsey dropped Bloodsport in the promo backstage tonight because he participated this past weekend. So a nice little bit of – this is something you wouldn't see in the Vince McMahon era, really, right? Unless they're trying to demonstrate.
I couldn't believe it. I've covered Bloodsport for the Torch before, and it has very little in common with the WWE product. So that was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I just like the fact that he gave that nod and the Triple H Shawn Michaels gave not only had Dempsey participate, but then they're giving them the name recognition on WWE TV.
Yes, indeed. So those were your matches. Chris Ofino he's cool looking. And he looks like he could be a big star, but he's got to overcome where he's defined right now. He's like the low guy in a faction that historically has not won a lot of stuff. like Tony D is not the guy to be a lackey to because he's not that. They made him a main eventer for a month, but that was out of necessity. I don't know.
This is the guy they had beat Pete Dunne and Tommaso Ciampa in their last matches in NXT, if I remember correctly. And they just never really built from there. So, yeah, I realize I forgot Fallon Henley real quick. I'm glad you brought up the whole she might be turning heel thing, because on Saturday in my report, I noted at the very end of the match when they were celebrating, she looked a bit salty, and I wondered if she was going to turn heel. And I noticed that I was the only one who made that observation after the match on Saturday, and that exclusive little thing they had backstage, a web exclusive backstage after San Deliver, also made it seem like Fallon Henley was going to turn heel because she was a little salty. So her being the one to get pinned here, I think, is just another level or another layer in her eventual turn, which I wouldn't be surprised comes with her using that turn to become the Women's North American Champion.
Yeah, and maybe she's salty because, like, she's been there a long time and she's gotten good and she loses a lot. Maybe she's salty because she was in the tanning bed and she fell asleep and she looks like a leather handbag. I don't know. What? She does. I graduated with a girl who literally looked and felt like leather. And I'm qualified to say that, folks. I just am. Okay, Chase U. They made an honorary couple of Fallon Henley and Kehlani Jordan. Then JC and Jazz showed up, and we're not done with Andre Chase gambling. It's still a thing. Ridge, Gacy, LWO, we kind of talked about that. Obafemi had a scene with Ivar, because why not? Okay, so this audience was real chant happy, and most of it was not on the nose, and they were chanting NXT during basic stuff. But Obafemi came out, Ivar came out, Ivar talked about the match Obafemi had, and there was a chant of slapping meat, which, yes, that happened. So we're going to get a little bit more of that. Obafemi has had good big versus small matches. But he's also had, now we know he can do slapping meat matches as well. Apparently his next one is going to be against Ivar, which could be a lot of fun. I also noted that Ivar on the mic is 8 billion times better than 3 years ago Ivar on the mic. So awesome job. I remember that being something that neither of these guys could do. His partner was even worse. But
he's screaming war the entire time isn't a good way to do promos, Kelly. I'm shocked.
It can't be the only thing you do. We also learned that Josh Briggs has 2 fractured ribs. That's a hell of a thing, considering where he was starting to be on the card. Anything on Ivar and Oba?
Well, on Ivar and Oba, with the meat chant, I saw some clips last night of the four-way and Bronson Reed and Drew McIntyre. When they started hitting each other, the crowd was just chanting meat for every single strike. So instead of going, woo, for the slaps, it was meat, right? So I guess that's a new thing now because, you know, I've noticed with WWE, their matches these days are either big, meaty men slapping meat or, like, really good storytelling. And not to say you can't have those be synonymous with each other, but my favorite wrestling matches are technical masterpieces or technical battles. You know, I like watching the Zack Sabre Juniors of the world, the Bryan Danielsons, the Bret Harts, right? Those kind of Shayna Baszlers, a lot of the good technical wrestlers. And then my second favorite is big meaty men slapping meat. And when those two coalesce into one, oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So this is going to be a really good match. I think I saw a tweet that said, I'm out here doing springboards in jeans, and that is very impressive considering the size of that man and wearing jeans and not being able to, you know, not tearing them or ripping them up when he's doing that. So it's going to be a very fun, hard-hitting match. I think NXT is beginning to separate itself brand-wise from the other two shows by having a lot more of these hard-hitting matches, and it's not just Obafemi, it's not just Dijak. It's also Ilya Dragunov, and it's also Josh Briggs that we're seeing, right? Blair Davenport on the other side as well as someone who really lays it in. So I think it's a good – there are the risks involved, of course, with injuries, having that more – that kind of a style. And New Japan, you see that happen frequently. But, okay, New Japan, you see it happen frequently because they're always getting slammed on their freaking necks. You don't move that aside. I feel like NXT is doing a really good job of separating themselves by having a lot of these matches. And not just for the sake of having big, meaty men slapping meat, but there's actually story involved. There's actually really intense moments, near falls, all that involved. So I really like the direction that NXT is heading with this, and I'm really looking forward to this. And whoever, you know, he's not going to win, Ivar, but it should be a fun match. And at the very least, it gives Obafemi another nice, solid victory to put on his resume because, yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree with what he was saying, that he took on two of the – this was another promo where he laced it with respect for his opponents, right, at the very beginning. And, yeah, it was a hard-hitting match, two of the top competitors for his title, and he defeated them both. So I did note that Obafemi was out there dressed like a 90s tourist. He was only missing the fanny pack, and he was still the coolest professional wrestler in the world.
Yeah, I could not believe that I was typing Obafemi entered, and he's wearing a polo and jeans.
Tucked into his jeans.
You mama. But
that's
yeah,
what I'm saying. If he had a fanny pack, it would have been full 90s right there.
He made it work. I will say, for folks out there, if you like technical marvels who can slap meat, might I suggest New Japan Pro Wrestling. And since you brought Hiromu up, I will just say, Hiromu, just take care of yourself. please, love the run you're on. Don't get injured again. That would make me happy. I believe that is it. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at Spooky Milk. Dot games. I did this shirtless, but I can't admit to having as much power in either of my nipples as Idris Inofe has in one.
And you guys gave me shit for doing the podcast without a shirt.
Hey,
we saw you.
And it
we saw
was
you, Alabaster.
Horrifying. Bruce.
Yeah, the lighting in my room was not good.
Oh, it's the light. Yeah, the lighting in your room. That's what it was. Not your northeastern body. Right. Gotcha.
No. The lighting definitely accentuated the mantis.
This needs to end. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at @B_Lee253. And I'll leave you all with this question. What would you do with Jacob Fatu?
And I will just say Nate Lindberg does not exist. He's a figment of your imagination. Just forget any of this happened. Cheers. We will see you in 10. So. How long were you there? Wow, we went long for a two-man.
We're still alive.
There was a lot of stuff going on. Oh, are we?
Yeah, you gotta hit end show.
Oh, right, because I haven't ended the show. Bonus content!
All right, guys. If Kelly can't do it, I'll do it.
We're very professional here.